Unhealed trauma can have you loving those who hurt you and hurting those who love you. My name is Andrea, and this is Adult Child. Welcome back to Adult Child, where we take a deep dive into the impact of growing up in a dysfunctional family. Ahoy, my dear shit shows. Shit show nation. It's been a while since I've done that. For any new listeners, my name is Andrea. I am a total and complete shit show. I am a recovering alcoholic. I am a recovering adult child of an alcoholic family. I found myself in one toxic relationship after the next, not knowing what the hell was wrong with me, and then realized that my childhood impacted me a whole hell of a lot more than I initially thought that it did, and that I was suffering from complex PTSD. No clue. No damn clue that that's what was going on. And there's so many people out there who also have no damn clue, who also have no damn clue just how impactful their childhood actually was and all the ways it is showing up in their lives as an adult in some not so great ways. And this is the podcast where we talk about what the hell to do about that. We curse here. You've been warned. I'm an acquired taste. You've been warned. Welcome aboard this hot mess of a ship. Buckle up. Gets a little weird sometimes. So today, folks, we are going back to Adult Child, episode 64. This was the first time that I interviewed a couple. So this is with Jeremiah and Mallory Campbell, who share their story of recovery, trauma, codependency, healing, parenting, and what it actually looks like to break generational cycles in real time. So we are talking about how unresolved childhood trauma hijacks your nervous system and your relationships, how easily codependency can look like love, what it looks like to reparent while parenting, and a whole bunch of other stuff. It's messy, it's vulnerable, it's got something for everyone, so let's get on with the damn show, okay? But first, let's talk about why you, yes you, need to damn the Join Shit Show, my online support community, where we have a minimum of 6 weekly Zoom support groups, where you can connect with other fellow shit shows who are doing the damn work to heal, where you can make real in-person friendships. I'm just getting back from our most recent shit show retreat that we had this past weekend at the Jersey Shore. It was packed with good times, good food, deep convos, and lots of laughing. I mean, is laughter not the best medicine? Like, I needed that laughing more than anything. Like, truly, truly. We played Boulder Dash. Do we have any Boulder Dash fans out there? It is by far my favorite game. But it was so fun, and I can't wait to do the next one. So if you're looking to feel seen, heard, and understood like never before, if you're looking for a support community at your fingertips, in your back pocket, then look no further than the damn shit show. This is relational trauma. We heal relational trauma through safe relationships. So how about you? Yes, you, the person that's been wanting to join for forever. I know there are so many of you out there because you keep joining, and I just want to speak directly to the person who is scared to death to join. I get it. Like, so many other people have felt the exact same way, and every time that somebody ends up, you know, finally doing it, finally damning the join, they wish they would have done it sooner. So I just encourage you, the person that's scared shitless, to join. You can do it. See the link in the show notes for less than $1 a day. Just give it a go. Let's give it a shot, folks. Or you can go to adultchildpodcast.com/shitshow next. Please, please, please give me a little follow on the Insta, on the TikTok, at adultchildpod. And last but not least, whatever you do, give me a damn 5-star rating on Apple, on Spotify. Thank you. Love you all.
Well, it is my pleasure to introduce two shit shows, two married shit shows. Co-host of the Destined to Be podcast, Jeremiah and Mallory Campbell. They are both coaches, business coach, relationship coach, life coaching, all that shit, shit show coaching. So I'm ready to, are you guys ready to do this?
I love it.
That's our favorite intro I think I've ever gotten.
Well, most people take offense to that. Like, they're like, who are you calling a shit show?
No,
and I guess this is the right audience for it.
No,
yeah, we're here for it.
Hot Mess Express.
Yeah.
Yes, Hot Mess Express. Yeah, I used to say recovering shit show, but that's inaccurate. I'm a recovering shit show. I'm still a shit show.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is where I want to start. Talk about the most difficult time in your marriage?
For between us or period?
As a couple.
Like, I would guess the two of us together.
Your parents.
Oh, okay. Yeah, go ahead. Go for it.
It was with her parents. We just had our, he's eight now, so we just had our first son. Mm-hmm. And so with my sobriety, so we're going to take it back a little bit.
Yeah, go back farther.
Go back farther. Mallory and I grew up sort of together. I've known her since I was like maybe 14.
We've been 15. Together since right out of high school. I was 18.
I was 21. And we were friends. I used to buy her booze with my fake ID.
Sure
did. Fake ID.
Yep.
And
like a good old half gallon of 5 o'clock. That was our go-to.
I liked Mohawk myself, but that's whatever. She's classy with the 5 o'clock. And so we grew up in the same area, just Southeast Michigan. And her neighbor, they used to call me Eddie Haskell.
And are you familiar with like,
Leave it to Beaver?
Okay.
Yeah. So that was the kind of person I was. And so
still am.
I mean, it's called charming now.
A lot of
it's the difference now because now we're not poor, right? And so when you're poor, you're weird. And when you have money, you're eccentric.
No one was calling you weird. You were just charming.
But that's the difference. Yeah. Now back then it was Eddie Haskell.
Haskell now?
Yes. Edward Haskell.
Oh, that's good.
And, deeper because I was Jeremy my entire life until I turned 18. My real name's Jeremiah. When I got sober, they said completely change everything or go back to drinking and drugging. So I'm like,
so glad you didn't pick Jerry, or I wouldn't have had you on.
No, Jerry is not allowed. That's not a sexy name.
That's her uncle's name.
That is also my uncle's name. So that's not good. That's not the move.
I have like a few names. Like there's certain names of guys like I couldn't date if you had to call them that. Like I know that this isn't a name, and I'm really sorry if anybody's listening and this is their name. But if somebody was named Dougie, like I couldn't do a Dougie.
No,
like do
like
the
that's the song. Like that's a song.
Do so you Dougie. Don't listen to that often.
Or like, well, it's different in a song context, but when you're like literally
doing the
Dougie. I don't
think
I could
do a Melvin.
No, Melvin's not going to fly either. Thank God your names are not any of those things.
Melvin Medford.
No, that was my grandpa's name was Medford. That's another one. Yeah, exactly. 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 So right, anyway.
So. The premise of the story is I ended up relapsing. I had a day shy of 8 months sober, ended up relapsing. When I relapsed, when Mallory and I first started dating, she got a DUI. She was 18 years old. She got a DUI visiting her boyfriend
up at college.
And so she like followed the rules. And she was like, well, they said don't drive. So she like stayed home.
I didn't. I like followed all the rules. They're like, you can't drive. You can't do any of this. And I'm like, I'm going to do all of that. And I'm not going to do any of that and follow everything that they said.
You're one of those.
Yes, right? Weird.
But
right? Who does that?
However, I still got the DUI and did a bunch of dumb shit before that. So, you know.
And so I was freshly out of my third rehab center and I couldn't stay sober. And so I called
the guy.
Married
at this point?
What's that?
No, we weren't married yet. I was 18 and
we were just starting dating. 21.
21.
Wow. And so we ended up going through, and this is going to get back to the actual question you asked. And so then I couldn't stay sober, and it was my third rehab center. I didn't understand addiction. So my dad would pick me up. We'd smoke weed on the way home. Like it was just don't go back to doing heroin, dude. You'll be fine. And so I didn't know how to stay sober, literally. And so I called my buddy, and his dad was sober growing up. And I knew he was a sober guy. He was cool, very successful businessman. I said, his name was Howie. I said, Howie, I can't stay sober. He goes, give me 20 minutes. I'm coming to pick you up. I'm going to take you to a meeting. So he comes and picks me up, takes me to a meeting. I start crying to him in the car. I said, dude, I don't know how this is a bad place in my environment with my dad. Come move in with me. He said, so I moved in with him next door to Mallory.
Who's my next door neighbor.
Okay.
My whole life.
She catches her DUI. I just happened to be leaving my third rehab center.
But you guys already knew each other?
Or no? Yeah, we knew each other. We went to high school together.
So we knew each other from, I was like 15 and now I'm 21. So we knew each other for about 6 years.
Yeah.
Okay. I knew her mom, her dad, all of these things.
Okay.
Yep.
So then
all of these things.
Yes. So then I ended up going the next door. Well, I was this charming Edward. I wasn't Edward.
You were
I was
not
Eddie.
Edward at the time.
I was
God.
Eddie Haskell, and she had got a GUI. I had no car, no license, no job, no money, no nothing. And I'm like, hey, you want to hang out?
I'm like, sure do. Can't resist that. Right? Can't resist that at all.
And so we started hanging out, and then we ended up started dating. And our first kiss was in a bowling. Yep. Yes, we were in a bowling alley. It was my first kiss. And
not
with,
in
with
life
her.
With me.
And we crossed that threshold. So then I relapsed. So we dated for about 3 months. I was somewhere in there. It was 3 to 4 months. I had a day shy of 7 months sobriety. I relapsed with the guy, and I was on a relapse for about 2 months.
I don't know. I'm terrible with timelines.
A month and a half.
You know right away?
No.
I didn't know. So when I'm 18.
I also turned 21 at the time.
We were together and so much together that I couldn't see outside of the bubble of, oh my gosh, he's changing, because I was like with him 24 hours a day. So I had no idea.
You know, developing codependency habits, oh, you know, 100%. Early on.
Oh God. Yeah. So like, I had no clue. So it got to the point where my parents were drug testing you and I was fighting it.
Howie next door went to your dad and said, Jeremiah relapsed.
Okay. Details.
Now
yes.
Go and give him a drug test.
Correct.
So what did I do?
I did
what every Edward Haskell would do and call their mother.
You called your mom.
I called
my
mom.
How did that happen though? Like they were like, come here, son. Like his.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I followed and I called my mom and I'm like, hey, you're going to come over
and
here.
And that was the start of
the craziness.
The start of everything. Yeah. Okay.
And, no. Well, I loved you.
Yes.
I was in love with you. You were in love with me. You were living at home.
Yeah.
I was living next door / my house. Your mom slashed your tires.
She slashed my tires. Like not even in the tread part, like in the side. So you couldn't even fix it.
She couldn't come and see me.
Like a pair of scissors.
Because of the DUI?
No, because this was.
I was going to say, well, that's why you didn't drive, is because your mom slashed your tire.
Right? One would think. Yes. No, she slashed my tire. At this point, I could drive again. Obviously. Yeah. And then she slashed my tire. So I couldn't go see him because he had relapsed.
But he was next door.
He was, I don't know where you were at
with my mom.
He was back at his mom's house.
Because I relapsed.
Yes. This was mid relapse. He left the neighbor's house. So anyway, details, let's move it along.
So then I had to get, so I went back two different rehab centers, get sober. This is my sobriety that I'm in now. And so I go to rehab through the grace of God. The place I was going, I went to four rehabs, same place. They said I can never come back. So I picked a new rehab center. Went to this rehab center, detoxed and released, ended up going straight back to meetings. And then that's when my little brother passed away. Mm-hmm. He was 18. He passed away from a drug overdose. Mm-hmm. Your parents came to the funeral, but they wouldn't talk to me. So I spent the next 4 years of my life trying to prove myself to her father that I was enough. I was the drug addict that relapsed with his daughter, was never good enough. So I spent all this time trying to get validation and approval from her dad. So I finally earned that validation and approval. Well, I didn't realize it because just like you said, why would you go back and say, why wouldn't you just tell them you're not my parents? Fuck off. Like, leave me alone. Because my logic wasn't there. I didn't have sound mind and body at the time. I was out during a relapse, right?
Well, also it's your girlfriend's parents. So
what, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You wanted their approval.
And so I spent all this time. When we had our first son, I'm going to fast forward. I finally won that approval. And
so now we get married, buy a house. Like
they did all the things.
Do all the things.
And she didn't realize that we were still the children. They never viewed us as adults at the time. I mean, we already had I started my construction business. We were very successful. Like we took trips all over the country, the world. Like we did things to approve, to get the validation of like, oh, you're successful. Mm-hmm. And I did all those, but he never looked at me that way. So then we had our first son and that's when all the stuff started happening. Her mom. And so
yes, well, I had postpartum depression at this time. So I get pregnant. Like it was planned. This is exactly what we wanted. We knew we wanted to have kids. So I get pregnant. Soon as I give birth, I have postpartum, which was not easy on our marriage because no one expects that to happen, right? First time parents, you have no idea what to even expect. Everyone paints this picture of pregnancy and the baby comes and it's just this beautiful moment. And like, you don't like, this was back in 2014. So social media was here, but it wasn't as raw as you tend to see now. Everything was still like magazines and reading all the highs of all the great things. And here I am giving birth, a very somewhat traumatic birth. And for the first one, I mean, it wasn't.
Oh yeah. Your epidural wore off. You broke shit. You broke the stirrup.
Yeah,
and the
it wasn't a good experience. My mom at the time couldn't even be in the room because she was feeding off of my pain and agony to where she couldn't even be there for me. Cause she was just holding everything that I was holding. So she couldn't even be there. I didn't even know like I was out of it. Right. Like going through this birth process. And I give birth, baby blues extended to postpartum depression, and I didn't know what it was. So here I am going through this time in my life. And then I decided to start competing in fitness competitions immediately after giving birth.
That was after when I started prepping immediately. Yes.
That when I could, I competed 7 months after having my first baby, which I would suggest to no one. That's like insane. So that all happened in that stretch of time, just to give context as to what I was going through when
that's what led up to the worst. So our son Ryder was 6 and a half, 7 months old. Mm-hmm. He was born in March. It was right around November, right around Thanksgiving. And it started going where I never realized it before, but her dad would call her and be like, "Hey, your mom's depressed. She's in bed. Come fix her."
Correct.
And I'm like, "What? We got like a family, like as a kid, like no."
Like we were our own family unit, but not really viewed as that. So.
And so then he started calling her and being like, "Mallory, you need to come home to have a family meeting." Like right. Without me, like she was still part of that family. Mm-hmm. And then they gave her the ultimatum and there was like, it was a series of events over like 2 weeks.
It went on for a really like extended period of time. Like we went to counseling and therapy with them. Like we did.
Until the one day when it was like, "You guys need to come over and we need to address this." Cause mm-hmm. we played racquetball on a Sunday. Right. And I told her, I said, "Hey," his name's Chuck. I said, "Chuck, Mallory is her own person. You need to allow us to have this space." And he's like, "What are you talking about? Like, no." And he never could comprehend. Later on, we found out how big of a narcissist he was and how they're in their dependent relationship and all the stuff that was going on after the fact. But we need to have a meeting, and I need to have a meeting with Mallory. And I said, "You're not having a meeting with my wife without me there." Mm-hmm. Like, that's not going to happen. It's me, Mallory, and our son. We need to figure this out. So we go have a meeting. We sit down. So Mallory and I call my sponsor on the way, and he prays with us. Mallory and I are holding hands. We're praying. We're like, "I don't know how this is going to go down." And on the depth of my soul, we walk into this house and they're sitting there with that mean mugging look.
It was just a very tense situation.
And we sit down on the couch and I say, "Hey, just so you guys know, this conversation mm-hmm. might change and alter the next 20 years of our lives." And this is and it did, because he kept calling the names to my mom, and we went back and
it
forth.
It was
and
just
back
very
forth.
Messy. It was a very
your mom,
messy. My mom. Oh. Yep, this was okay. My parents.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was a very messy.
So we had a falling out. Had to a answer your out. Question for from 20 minutes ago.
For real,
we had a falling out with her parents. We were very close. We went dining with them once a week.
I mean, we hung out with them.
We were their children.
You went dining right. with them.
Uh-huh. We were we spent a lot of time together. We had a really good relationship until
we fine dined with those
right.
Chefs.
Like, I don't even know.
What this is. We did.
Yes, but like, okay.
Your dad had his fucking a Tommy Bahama all shit
right.
on. And
all right, details.
My dad loves the Tommy Bahama too.
Yeah, I think every dad.
And my fat kid stage, I did too.
Okay, enough.
I had Velcro pants.
You did. You did. So yes, to answer your question. To answer your question, that has been probably the hardest time in our marriage. And that was,
well, it was a divorce, I'm going to speak for myself. Had no idea about my neurology. I had no idea about fight, flight, fawn, freeze, none of it.
We had
all I knew was I was freaking the fuck out. Mm-hmm. And so were you. And all we could
do is
it was so traumatic, right? Too much, too soon, too fast. It was so traumatic. It was so hard. It was our lives as we knew it were flipped upside down. And for the first time in my life, or since I couldn't get sober or before then, and it triggered all this childhood trauma where I was like, "Oh my God, it's just us, me and her. Like, we have nobody else." Cause we already abandoned my dad. We already like cut him off. And yeah.
Well, so you're okay. So it causes a rift between with you and your family, but talk about what was going on between the two of you. I mean, was that just like a difficult time? I guess my question was more so, and I'm glad that you shared that, because there's a lot to dive into there, but would you say that was that the most difficult time between the relationship between the two of you?
I don't think so.
June.
So you answered the question completely incorrect.
Fuck.
It's okay. Well, there was a lot there that will.
Yes. There's a lot
of juice there that I have questions on, but yeah. I would say sure. My question was going to more so like, okay. when were you not going to make it? Like, was
never.
I don't think that's ever been in question.
Okay. But when was the closest?
The closest. I mean,
me or her,
she's saying in the relationship.
Mutual. I know, mutual. Well, last June,
what about
I had
June?
A panic
that's
attack.
That's the first, that's the juicy
and,
one.
And you guys, nobody's got social mental, mentally. What am I looking for?
I don't know.
What just happened? What's the problem that happened in Texas?
Mental health.
Okay. Nobody's got those. They're just fucking weak.
Okay.
That's how I thought.
Okay. So let's take it back. Okay. So prior to June 2021.
Yes.
You were very much operating in all or nothing. It's weak if you rest. Like if you can't share a feeling, I'll figure it out for you. Like that type of thing.
I went on our podcast.
Oh my gosh.
And I was sitting from
here. Yeah, like you're in like real adult child mode.
Oh, I go there still. You want to know about that?
Oh,
well, no, it sounds like, sounds like an adult child bottom, but continue.
Yes. And so I was sitting there across from her and at the depth of my soul, this was true. I was like, if I die, you should be fine within 2 or 3 weeks.
Yep. 2 or 3 weeks after 15 years together, I would just be fine. And I'm like, that's absolutely untrue. Like, no, that's not a thing for me. 2 to 3 weeks. And yeah. I'm like, how would you feel? He's like, yeah, give me like 2 to 3 weeks and I'd be good. And I'm like, excuse me?
Yeah.
Like aired on the podcast. And I'm like, that was, I don't really know how to respond to that. Like 2 or 3 weeks.
That's
like,
where I was.
Almost half our lives together.
That was where I was.
Mother of your
very emotionally in tune.
Yeah. Like so there wasn't any of that. It was like, you were weak because you didn't do this. So I was a mindset coach and I was around very masculine men for a very long time. That was like, if you want this, like my whole life, I run our marriage as a business and it doesn't work with masculine and feminine energy. It doesn't work. Like I do like, this.
He didn't believe in any of that dynamic. He's like, what do you mean you're showing up this way? No,
you just
tell me your problem and I'll just fucking fix it for you.
Yeah.
Like just fix it. So I have all like, and I'm not putting any blame on you, but even from my previous childhood, like I have so much wounding inside that my body just responds in a certain way that I had no idea. So now that we're becoming like, we're more aware to all of these things. Still now I become triggered internally, mentally. I know the difference, but inside I'm like,
exactly
right back to it in a matter of,
yeah. And then when he responds in that way, then it's like the shame of like, I shouldn't feel this way.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So that happened. So
I forgot the name of the podcast for a second. I'm like, okay, let's switch the direction. Mm-hmm. You want to know about
y'all out.
You know, the real adult child shit. How about last night?
What about last night?
She was sick. And so we planned on having sex last night.
I was sick, not sick last night.
Yes, I know. But you remember earlier in the day, you were like, yes, like we talked about being intimate, right?
Uh-huh.
And right before bed, you pulled the I'm tired shit, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, we had just like a miscommunication.
There was no miscommunication.
Yes.
Mallory says she's tired. Little Jeremy says he's not loved. Mm-hmm. Little Jeremy, the little boy in me, then says, hey, mom doesn't approve. Mom doesn't want me. Mom doesn't think that I'm enough.
Yeah.
And so then I automatically, Jeremiah in front of you, then gets triggered and says, you're not enough.
Mm. Yes.
All she said she was.
So he looks at me in the eye and he's like, you saying you're tired means I'm not enough. I'm like, excuse me, what? Like, that's immediately where you go to. He's like, yeah. So we had to like work through that last night.
It's not here. It's a response here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In my body.
But that's still not the moment that she's asking about.
Okay. So I just want to give her an idea.
Okay.
I
So the most difficult time.
He's trying not to get, he doesn't want to, you know, he's trying to really avoid this.
No.
I mean, I'm kidding.
The most difficult time was probably last June.
Yes. It was last June. So it was a series of things. That's where I was about a month and a half before we had the conversation, before we started having the conversations, before I started really having like biological, neurological.
Like your nervous system was in overdrive to where he would physically be moving about, we'd be having a conversation. He'd be like twitching and all of this energy would start to come up. And he's like, I don't even know what's happening. Then your lips would be shivering and like this whole.
And I had no idea what was going on.
We had no clue what was happening at the time. We're like, oh my gosh, this is like intense. What's wrong with you? Like, what is this?
And so, and what created that was conversations about wants, desires, and fantasies of mine. Mm-hmm. And so I'd studied Dr. Joe's work for many years. I've been to many of his retreats. Literally the tattoo on my arm was after my first advanced workout or workshop.
Joe Dispenza?
What's that? Yeah. Dr. Joe Dispenza.
Yeah. Okay.
And so I created a reality outside of me that was more real than the internal inside of me
mm-hmm.
through meditations, through different types of workouts, through different breathing. So go ahead.
No,
I'm not. Oh, so it was outside of me and it was bigger. So then I started getting, I had 1 foot in 3D and then 1 foot in a different dimension. Don't know where it was, but then I couldn't start correlating. So I was starting to say things and do things and feel things. But then this is the same time as if you're a follower of astrology and the Greek calendars and things, this was during COVID. Uh-huh. So the government threw way too much money at people in my industry and what we did. So we had built our dream house. We completely remodeled it. I wasn't doing what everything in my life shifted. Mm-hmm. And it created this perfect runway for me to sit with her and be real for the first time, where I was able to lay down with her. Our sex life was a 12 out of 10. Our finances were a 12 out of 10. Everything was going almost so perfect.
Everything was so great that was there was so nowhere for his attention to really focus on any problems to like grasp to be like, oh no, I got to go fix this over here.
There was no grounding
to where it was just here
to put my awareness.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And I ran out of things to do. The house was done. My office was done. And so it was a perfect storm. I was in Florida with my sales staff and my operations staff. She was in Florida, 3 hours away from us at Legoland with our 8-year-old and my sister and my nephew. And then my mom had our 3-year-old at the time. And I'm laying on a beach listening to a podcast from Aubrey Marcus. And I go into a full shock.
Like a panic attack.
Like a full on, I'm by myself on the beach and I'm in a full panic attack. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what to do. And it was the same feeling intensified that I had 2 nights before that in our bedroom. Mm-hmm. And then a week before that in our bedroom. And it was, we're having a conversation. I turn pale, my fingers start moving, my lips turn purple, and I start having a full neurological, like my body shaking. Reaction. I can't control it. And I don't know what's
trauma
going on.
Response.
And so I had no clue what was going on. Mm-hmm. Like zero. And then I'm on the beach and I'm scared for my life. Mm. For the first time ever. I wasn't this scared when I was getting clean or sober from or shooting dope in abandoned houses. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I'm laying there on the beach and I don't know what to do. So I call her and I'm like, I'm freaking out. And she's like, what are you doing? I'm at a theme park. Let me be with Ryder. Like this, right. like, what are you doing? Like, what's going on? What's coming up? Like, nothing's real. In my head, I lost the house. I lost her. She was leaving me. The kids were, I couldn't see the kids anymore. That didn't matter. My mom, everything, the bottom, the impending doom that took me to the place that I got, where we got, where we are now, before June, the other foot finally dropped. Mm-hmm. I was waiting and anticipating it, but I finally pushed the envelope far enough. The other foot dropped. Mm-hmm. And I'm laying on the beach and I get on the phone and she told me to call a friend of ours and I'm crying with 6 other grown men around me. And I'm not like that because I don't feel feelings and you're weak. Right. And so I'm sitting there and I'm, don't know what to do. And I'm crying to this man. And I knew him from a mastermind from years before. And he goes, brother, everything that you talked about and everything that you desired is actually the complete opposite. This is your body telling you right now that this is the exact opposite. And this is your body protecting you. Mm-hmm. You're safe. I got you. I love you. And I fucking believed him. And I believed him.
So then the next 6 to 8 months, that's when,
I slept like 1 or 2 nights a week.
Mm-hmm. That was rough for you and us. Like that was the point where it's like,
he told me I was codependent.
Yeah.
I'm like, F you, you don't know what you're talking about.
Right. So there was a lot of that happening with deep rooted fears from both of us that the other one was going to leave based off of our codependent cycles and habits. And what came of that, because one of us would get triggered and the other one would get triggered, and then one would leave, then the other one would have to come find the other one. It's like not literally leave, like walk out of our bedroom, leave, like in the house somewhere. But that was the communication around that for a good 6 months was.
Yeah. And it still comes up sometimes and it's bringing the awareness around it. But when they started telling me I was codependent and I'm like, you're crazy. And then I read codependent no more. And then I went, you're not crazy. You're codependent. And I read those books and I got the workbooks and I'm starting to listen to it. And I'm like, holy shit, I'm codependent.
Yeah.
Like, and so now the idea of having an interdependent relationship, I'm like, no, that's why would I
well,
want
then
to be married
fear,
to you?
Cause then cause my the codependency came out. And then now coaches are saying like, okay, no, you have to be okay within that. You don't depend on this other person for your soul being of life. And then now all of a sudden I was gone and then he didn't need me. It was just like,
oh, scary stuff.
That was the moment within those couple months, that was probably like, I believe deep in our soul, we knew that neither of us were going anywhere, but so much of that deep rooted trauma would come up and then like play with us and be like, oh no. And then we'd have
there's
to like
so much comfort in codependency.
Well, of course it's like Netflix and ice cream.
Yes.
It's great.
It's, I was reading, it was in one of her other, but it might be in the codependent workbook, but she originally wanted to title the book. It was like codependent less so or something like that. Yeah. But because, you know, no more is like a little bit of a stretch, but, so, okay. So let's dig into that abandonment shit then. Each of you, let's start with you, Mallory. What was some of your, was there any abandonment trauma or in childhood? Like what was your experience with either physical or emotional abandonment?
And that's the part that gets me. Cause I mean, I wasn't physically like left anywhere. There isn't any of that. However, my parents growing up, like we were talking about, my parents are the ones that we don't have a relationship with anymore. I was always the fixer in my household, to where if my mom had her depression, anxiety, whatever was going on with her, I'd have to come and fix her. So they were great parents growing up, but at a younger age, if I would have had to come in and step in as that role to fix my mom, that led me into when he would have a reaction or something would happen, I'd automatically have anxiety and want to go fix him or help him. And then that is the cycle that would come up for us. So I would want to immediately go fix whatever was going on with him, even if it had nothing to do with me, because I immediately made it mean that it had to do something with me, whether it did or whether it didn't, because that's what I dealt with growing up, no matter what is going on with mom.
That's parentification. And that is a form of emotional abandonment. Because when you are, you know, your parents are emotionally abandoning their role as being your parent.
Yeah.
You know, same thing for me too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They were great parents. I will say that
it was when we went through therapy, and we still weren't enough for your parents. How about that wound?
Yeah.
Because we didn't give a shit telling my dad to fuck off.
True.
But your parents, we tried everything we could.
Yes.
To make that right.
No, you're right.
Even apologizing. But the last straw was when the therapist said, you can't tell him to me, I apologized. And he and her dad says, you didn't apologize the way I wanted you to.
Right.
We did everything we could. And then they still rejected us.
Correct.
That's a deep wound.
That. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I had a lot of like blame coming onto me for my own depression. She would like, my mom blamed me for her depression because I was depressed. So there's like a lot of that going on. So it just came out in when everything went down last year, like a lot of that came up that we weren't even ready for. And your stuff came up first. And then my stuff came up because I didn't really know at the time, like really, because I was there just to be like, holy shit, what's happening with you? Like, let's make sure you're okay. And then that's also part of it, right? Like, make sure everyone else is okay first, and then I'll figure it out on my own after that.
Yeah.
That. And that's like, that runs really deep.
And what about you, Jeremiah?
Those are good ones.
What was your dysfunctional family like?
So a lot of it too, we didn't know. Like this inner childhood shit, I was like, yeah, whatever. And now that's like, we spent all of our time doing, like we spent 20 plus hours a week each in this work. And when it became aware for me in June, she held space for me. And so now she's going deep and I'm there to hold space for her and let her, you know, go as deep as she needs to go. And as her body's going to allow her to go. For me growing up, a lot of it, you know, it's real to me, right? Like I remember multiple times because there was four of us growing up where my emotional needs were never met. My childhood, my innocence was stolen from me by my dad because I would run down the stairs to be loud when he smoked weed in the living room. And I didn't know it at the time, but I had somebody guide me through it. Like that then told my body that I wasn't important enough, that I wasn't allowed to feel, and I wasn't allowed to be a kid in my house and be curious. My mom was completely irrational. Like my mom taught me how to go from 0 to 200 to 0 in less than 5 seconds.
Yep.
Go from, I love you. What the fuck? Are you fucking, what shit? And this is to my children, like yesterday. And she'll look at me and now she does this thing where she'll put her hand on me like, I'm okay. Cause I'm freaking out. and have no idea, but then I can bring it straight back to zero. Like, what do you mean? Mm-hmm. She's like, but I was here. You just lost your shit. And so not being able to emotionally handle anything allowed me, and my mom taught me that that's the way that you handle life. Like, so you don't actually have to feel anything. Mm-hmm. You lose your shit and then do it. And so my mom is very hyper like me and our oldest child. And so I need love that way. So if she has no energy to give me, if she doesn't go around, clean the house, rearrange my bedroom once a month and do those kinds of things, I'm like, you must not love me, because that was the only way I was able to be shown love. Mm-hmm. And then my dad constantly growing up, the story I remember my dad, ever since I can remember, he hated my mom, and he would pull into the driveway and be like, son, the shittiest part of my day is coming back home to see your mom. And so like, that was like the anchoring point of like, that's marriage. That's what it is. And that's just the start of a few of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you guys read The Laundry List before?
Have not.
No.
You guys need to read the ACA book. I'm telling you.
ACA?
Yeah. Children of Alcoholic and Dysfunctional. I mean, when I read that the first time, I mean, it blew my mind way more than it's like, I mean, it's taking this codependency stuff to the next level. So, okay. So this is the laundry list. So these are like the 14 traits of an adult child. I'm curious which of these you guys relate to.
Oh my God. Like, everything is excitement. I can have the most exciting moment in the entire world. Mm-hmm. And what do you say to me? We have 12. What do you say to me? What do you say to me after I've experienced the most exciting thing in the world?
I'm not sure.
You always tell me, you're like, you're going to want more tomorrow. Oh
yeah. Yes. There's, okay. I didn't know where you're going with
never
that.
It's enough. Never enough.
So what do you think about this one?
Oh yeah, for sure.
We have overdeveloped sense of responsibility, and it is easier for us to be concerned with others rather than ourselves. This enables that. Us not to look so closely to our own faults. I stay so busy, I don't have to be aware. Yeah.
Number six for me, for sure. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Love and pity. Oh my God. I can't, until a month ago, I never told Mallory I was tired, because I thought if I was tired, then she wouldn't want to have sex with me. And I can only get love by intimacy, mm-hmm. because early stages of pornography.
Mm-hmm.
And so those anchorings.
So this one, like, I didn't think that this one initially applied to me, because I had always been able to talk about my childhood and not get upset about it.
Yeah, that's you.
And oh, so that's him. I thought that meant that it didn't impact me. But dude, I realized, this is what I would do. It would be like I was a newscaster standing in front of a burning house, but it's actually my house, you know?
That's exactly you. Cause even your coach was like, the way that you share about this childhood, it's like you literally just ordered dinner off of a menu.
Trauma. He goes, you're a 10 out of 10 in all three areas. And he goes, that was to be expected. The way you told me this was like,
mm-hmm. exactly. Like she just said,
read it. So people know it was number 10. We have stuffed our feelings from our traumatic childhoods and have lost the ability to feel or express our feelings because it hurts so much. Denial. Yeah. I mean, I really thought because I could talk about it, that meant it didn't impact me.
Yeah.
So how did you work through that? Because I get clients all the time, mm-hmm. in that same way. Cause I'm the same way.
So like my story is like, you know, I hit my adult child bottom at 9 years sober. I found a therapist who really fucking understands this stuff. I'm telling you, this stuff is like, so you're going to read the adult child book and it's going to fucking blow your mind. It is amazing. That's why I'm so passionate about this work. I mean, it really has just the amount of growth and transformation. The meetings are great, but I think it's really having a therapist that's good. But I mean, I'm telling you this, I mean, I've done Al-Anon, I've done CODA, I'm obviously an AA, but like this adult child shit is like really where it's at.
This is the next level of AA, because a lot of my friends that go to 12 steps, they're like, go there and they stay in this plateau and it's a safe cocoon. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like go experience life now outside of your two meetings a day. And then once you do that, like your AA is the safe place for you to hide.
I had no idea that I was suffering from complex PTSD, like no fucking clue. And so I think that there's so many people who Well, I think that there's, I think everyone in AA probably at a certain point needs to go to ACA or at least read this stuff. But I just think there's so many people out there who are oblivious that like the recurring issues that they're encountering in life is actually a result of like their unresolved childhood shit. And this is why there's people in AA that have 20 years sober and they're fucking miserable.
I love you. Like, this is so fucking good. I try to explain this to people and I'm like,
all right, shit show ladies. Have you ever had those days where everything just feels so much damn harder than normal and you can't figure out why? I already know the answer to that question is yes. And boy, have I definitely had more than my fair share of those days and totally get just how frustrating this can be. But recently I've learned that sometimes it's not just stress, lack of sleep, a dysregulated nervous system. It could also be my hormones at play. And that is where Happy Mammoth comes in. They offer a free 2-minute quiz that can help you uncover the root cause of your hormonal symptoms. It's super easy. Any shit show can do it. Just answer a few questions about what you've been going through and where you're at in life. After taking this quiz, you'll get personalized recommendations to help balance your hormones and start feeling better. So I took this hormone quiz myself. The quiz suggested that my body may be overloaded with estrogen, which is affecting me in all kinds of ways. And one of the recommendations that I got was to start taking Hormone Harmony, which helps with bloating, chronic fatigue, weight gain, mood swings, and more. And after adding it to my routine, I've definitely noticed a difference. Now, taking care of your hormones isn't just about feeling good right now. It's also about investing in our healing journey. And so by taking this quiz, you'll learn more about your hormone balance, which will allow you to start making small, intentional changes to support you on this healing journey. Whether it's the Hormone Harmony or another Happy Mammoth product, the quiz helps guide you towards solutions that work specifically for you. So if you're ready to start feeling like yourself again, head over to happymammoth.com and take their free 2-minute hormone quiz today to find out the ultimate answer to your stubborn hormonal issues. And for a limited time, you can also get 15% off your entire first order with my code adultchild at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code adultchild for 15% off today.
A healthy life starts with great sleep. Wake refreshed with Avocado's GOTS certified organic green mattress, delivering breathable, back-loving support. Natural materials from Avocado's own sustainable wool and latex farms, easy financing, a 1-year sleep trial, and deep, restorative slumbers. Organic sleep awaits at avocadomattress.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
So during one of my coaching contracts, I had a coach tell me, I'm like, well, no, I'm addicted to sex. That's what it is. I'm addicted to sex. I'm going to go to SA or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And he's like, no, you're not. And he's like, no, you're not. Because that's another label that you're going to put on yourself. That's going to then take you to heal. And he would just say, stop, slow down, be with yourself. He made me stop meditating, made me sit outside. And this is the work. And he goes, why did you pick up drugs and alcohol in the first place? And I'm like, because I liked it, because I liked the way it made me feel. Mm-hmm. And he goes, what else? And I gave him a few other things and he goes, good. That's what they told you. Now, why did you really use? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, cause I didn't feel like I was enough. And I didn't feel like, and I go on and on. And he goes, okay, why did you feel that way? What took place in your life for that to happen? And I'm like, I don't know. He goes, because your body's keeping you safe, because it's unsafe to go feel it. So now our only thing we can do, and that's when I got into EMDR therapy, and he goes, we're going to set you down. We're going to slow you down enough. And those extrinsic value thoughts are going to be, start pulling out the intrinsic thoughts. Mm-hmm. Those ones that your body, remember your mind will forget what your body always remembers. Mm-hmm. And there's a book I read, The Body Keeps the Score, that started teaching me those things. And I'm like, wait a minute, if I heal the traumas, that's actually the cure to all of my problems.
All this is just faulty childhood programming, and it just manifests in different ways. And for me, the reason I think that this work is so fucking transformative is because this is how I like view it. So it's like AA taught me like how not to drink. Like Al-Anon helps with like learning how to have boundaries and be in relationships. But like this adult child work has like, I've learned how to be my authentic self.
Your truth.
Because we grow up in these homes where we learn that it's like not okay to be who we are. And so we have these traits ingrained in us, like in order to survive, like that's how we had to act in order to survive. And what happens is like our true self goes into hiding and this faulty self like emerges. And so that's why I think true freedom is like really addressing all of this shit. You know, I believe it's really the core. This one. So when I read this one that I have highlighted, that one, I mean, I was just like, holy fucking shit.
We are dependent personalities who are terrified of abandonment and will do anything to hold onto a relationship in order not to experience painful abandonment feelings, which we receive from living with sick people who were never there emotionally for us. That was us. And it was perpetual. It was, she would go into her response, I would go into my response. And we were so busy at building our dream life. Mm-hmm. Then we got it and we're like, oh, there's nothing else to work for. Now it's us.
Yeah.
Is this enough? And because I never fixed the actual problems to my alcoholism or just my ism, there was never enough.
The ism.
It's like, there's never enough. There's nothing else that I can do outside to hide the way I feel about myself. I have so many brothers that I work with in sobriety that are in the same point. And I think it has to do with this multidimensional world that we're living in now. And we're getting woken up from these different angles and different dimensions of what's going on and what's even real and what's not real. Mm-hmm. That like it's forcing people like us on this call to literally rise up to then guide other people. And like that's my why. Mm-hmm. Like to bring the deep truth centering to myself. And the only way I get it from myself is to guide other people through it.
Yeah.
And that's the purpose.
Well, I mean, that's why we are choosing to work with so many couples now, is because he sees one end of it. We work with married, like I have a lot of women in my community, and now some of the husbands are coming to work with him, and now we're bringing them together. It's like from everything that we've gone through, like we thought we were ready to open up this container last year before all this shit happened. We're like, holy shit, there's no way we were even like close to like guiding people through this, because we had to go through it ourselves. Like it was just more that surface level coaching at that point in the beginning of last year, just like mindset and like, okay, how do you communicate? But like not how you really communicate, like on a soul level, like all the shit that you're not really saying, that you're just like, oh. It like,
well, we're in a 9-month somatic program right now about feeling and releasing emotions, mm-hmm. and about how do you embody your truth.
A lot of trauma is like a lot of trauma work is involved.
Inner child, like, but it's,
and we have to go through it in order to move through the program.
Mm-hmm. And you pick up a 1/4-inch, and I always tell Mallory, I'm like, look, it's what we're dealing with, what this pain and these traumas, they're 1 inch wide, mile deep. Mm-hmm. And so our neural pathways are designed to go there. Mm-hmm. And so every modality, every course, every conversation, every intimacy, every time we're allowed to be vulnerable, we start building that valley back up, and it makes it a little bit easier not to fall, and it's not as deep, but that path is always going to be there, and that path is comfortable. So it's choosing what's in, I'm an ism, right? So like it's putting that thing down, picking what's not comfortable. So I always say if it's easy now, if it's really easy right now, it's got to be my will. If it's hard now and it's going to be easy later, that's God's will. Mm-hmm. So like whose will am I living in right now? And who am I trying to be and impress? And I'm like, this sucks.
Mallory, did you hit a codependency bottom? Or was it just like a slow decline?
Yeah. I mean, there was a point where we were working with a husband and wife coach, which was great because they were able to bring our separate sessions together. Uh-huh. And then like they would talk with each other and then bring from that what we each needed.
Talk about the sessions that we had in their living room.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, there was some stuff that definitely came up when I was working with my coach where she's like, oh no, you're definitely codependent. And I'm like, excuse me, what? Like, you are talking probably to the wrong person right now. Like, that's not a thing. And then I was like, oh shit. Cause he was in it. And then I was in it. I'm like, fuck, like both of this work so in sync with each other that if it wasn't pointed out to us where we were at last year, I mean, it would have came out eventually, but it was literally in front of us where we couldn't avoid it. So now we see it for what it is. But like you said, sometimes it's so easy that you just slip right back and you're like, oh shit. Like, you have to have the awareness around it. Like, fuck, I'm doing it like right now. I have to pull myself out of that. But it wasn't like, I don't know if it was, I mean, it wasn't as deep as where you went to, but it was definitely, it was unavoidable last year to not look at that head on for what it was.
Mm-hmm. And we can't compare, right? Like what's hard for me might be a one for her, or what's, right. What's a one for her could be a 10 for me. And it's how your body responds to it. So I've never been in my body my entire life. Mm-hmm. I disassociated. Same. I was molested. Like, so my coping mechanism is, as when I quit drugs, I turned to hopium and I lived on hope. And so my body, if Jeremiah was here with little Jeremy dictating his actions and how he felt, the 5-year-old version. I mean, I had background. I just changed it like 2 months ago, month ago. Right. Mallory at 7-year-old was my lock screen. And then I was my 5-year-old. So when I argued, I was arguing not with this grown woman, I was arguing with a 7-year-old version of her, the one that wasn't enough. And so my body would be 3 steps ahead of me, 2 steps above me floating. And it would be pulling my human here, pulling me. So I was never grounded. And I can't be here to hold space for my wife or my family or my friends if I'm always there. But what I could do was pull them with me where I was going. Mm-hmm. And so it got us to this point. But the bottom was realizing, like, we can't go to where we want to go. And where we want to go has nothing to do with money, has nothing mm-hmm. to do with prestige, has nothing to do with everything that we chased our whole lives, which was success. Mm-hmm. We had to throw. And now I'm in a divorce right now with the person I thought I wanted to be.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. How has communication changed for y'all over the past year?
Oh shit. That sucks too. We have to be very, very intentional
and very mindful, especially with me where I am right now. Like, just in recently what I have uncovered and some of the stuff that I'm going through, what I've noticed is, like, we were just going through this, like, not too long ago. We just talked about it yesterday on our podcast. Like,
it's 7% what you say, 32% how you say it, and over 50% is unspoken energy.
So, like, he'll be sitting here doing whatever, and automatically I'm triggered as if I caused the look on his face that had literally nothing to do with him. So my previous response, I go into shutdown. I just disassociate. I numb. I don't want anything to do. I can't form a sentence, can't form a thought. And that would be a huge area for us that we would have miscommunication, because something would come up. I would literally go into shutdown mode. He would be so incredibly hurt. And then it would just, that's where it would go. We didn't know how to come back. And then codependency would come back up and be like, oh, let me just come back and fix you. And you'd be, you know, like, whatever. So we had to really navigate that.
We still are. And it's a moment to moment thing.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
And so I personally am super critical on myself. Mm-hmm. Very, very critical. And I have to seek to be curious about her, and I have to genuinely, and it can't be coming from a fake place. So for the past even 3 months, it was, I'm scared still that she's going to reject me. She picks up emotionally and energetically that I'm afraid. She then can't feel safe to open up to me. So when I have a conversation, I'll go like this. So what are you doing? So what are you doing tomorrow? Excuse me. What are you doing? Hold on. And I fucking swear to God, what are you doing tomorrow?
It's not that dramatic.
No, fuck you. I'd spend like 4 times with all love, like 4 times, because I'm a lot. Times no, 4.
I've noticed.
And so I'm so much energy. And then when she doesn't receive it, I'm like, mm-hmm. why don't you want me? And so I have to go into a conversation with that.
Because even if he's just coming from a place of work and he's just excited about something, it literally, my body feels attacked by just the massive energy that comes at me, no matter what it is, if it's good, if it's bad, if it has nothing to do with me, I'm like, holy shit. Like I go into like, and then like, we have to navigate that. So like, he'd like, and I'm very thankful at this moment because of what we're processing and what we're going through, that he's more mindful now than just like, you know, I used to tell, like, you'd walk in from work just by the way you were walking, and you're like, oh shit. I don't even know what happened, but I automatically took it on as my own. And then that's then you a lot of the work.
And then she went and asked me.
Right.
Now she does. She checks in, or she'll be like, hey, are you okay? Yeah. And I'm like, Mallory, stop asking me if I'm fucking okay. Okay. Stop. Like, I'll tell you if I'm not okay. And she'll be like, obviously you're not. And then she'll give me space. And then she'll come
answered,
back.
Asked and answered.
Right.
And then she'll come back. But then like, when I have a really exciting day or something happens, I'll go like this. And this is just how I've trained her. Because she was with me. I didn't train her because I said, you will be trained. I trained her because that's just because we've been together for so long.
Just
can we just come in like with a thumbs up or a thumbs down, right? Like, you know, remember in Gladiator?
Yes.
Yep. And now we kind of do that with like, he'll come in and like put his hand on my shoulder just to let me know, like, I am okay in this moment. Like it's, you know, like we have some signals now, but yeah, like, yes, you have, it's never was like, I'm going to train you to be this way. It's just how it was.
I'll pick my phone up like this and she'll look at me. She'll be like, are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, I could be looking at Mallory from across the room. I'm like, damn good. You look good. And she'll look at me.
But
like,
his
face
is like fully like resting man, bitch face. Like, oh fuck. But I don't know what's going on in his head.
And she'll be like, do you hate me? And I'm like, I want to rip your pants off. Like, what are you talking about?
I don't say that.
So we have to be,
but it goes levels deeper than that.
Crystal clear on that. Mm-hmm. We try our best to use the Imago dialogue. We try our best to come from.
What's the Imago dialogue?
It's,
you have,
I have one of the books right here, Getting the Love You Want book. And so it's the number one communication technique for couples. And so it's a mirroring thing, but if you don't know how to do it, you're gonna sound like an asshole.
Well, you could come off really condescending.
Very condescending.
Do it, like, in a way that's not nice.
So you mirror that. Mallory comes to me and she says, hey, I really had a problem that you came in with such a shitty attitude. And I say, Mallory, I completely understand. So Mallory, I get why you said that, because I did. I came in with a lot of energy and I didn't even acknowledge you. Mm-hmm. So now I'm mirroring back, and so she's understanding. I'm digging for it. Was there anything else about that you really
didn't
like? Well,
there's the mirroring, like? There's the clarifying questions.
Then there's the validating. Say, Mallory, I completely understand why you're upset, because, and you said, did you hear my pitch? Just go, why? And so then she automatically would shut down. So I would have to say, hey,
why?
So I understand why you're doing, why you would be completely upset about that. Now
you're because you're fucking crazy.
Yes.
Right.
You're fucking nuts, right?
Right.
And so is there anything that, so you mirror them, you ask
anything else you didn't like about that, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Bitch.
Exactly.
Fucking crazy bitch.
Yes.
Yep.
And so then you validate it and then you empathize. And I say, hey, you know what? I was probably wrong coming in there. Is there any other way that you would like me to address that? So she gets the opportunity to be seen, heard. And then I'm curious about what she would prefer. So that's essentially the Imago dialogue.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah.
What about boundaries?
We have definitely have boundaries.
We have boundaries. I mean, what is the context? Like with other people, with us, like whatever. Okay.
Between the two of you.
Between the two of us?
You give me as much space as I want. I just don't want the space because I still have codependency habits. So I know when Mallory's a no-no zone during any morning time. Or when she's tired.
I don't like to be fucked with in the morning, you know?
Her and our 4-year-old are both the same.
Yeah. I just need some space, like some time to wake up. I just need some space. Like, we're very different in that aspect. So his number one love language is physical touch. So like, if he could just be touched on all the time, he'd be like very happy. And that's like one of my lower ones.
It's her third. It's not that low.
Yeah. It's my third or fourth. Because I can't remember.
We just retook him.
We took it like 2 weeks ago. So I need some space in that time. And that's also been part of the communication is, hey, I need some space right now with not him getting hurt by that. Like, I just need some time for whatever reason, or I just don't like right now. I just don't want to be, if my stomach hurts or my head, like, I just want to be touched or something. I just need a little time for myself. So that's been another part of the communication that's been really interesting to navigate without you having your feelings hurt because I need space, but it has nothing to do with you. It has everything to do with me.
Yeah. And around work, I mean, so in like the 9 different areas of life, love and relationships are one that we challenge ourselves the most on. Every other area, mm-hmm. like boundaries around household chores, boundaries around work,
yeah.
boundaries mm-hmm. around finances, friendships,
relationships, like we're on the same
we're
page.
We're a 9 out of 10 on all of those. That. Yeah. Like we don't argue about it. Like we both we're agree we don't page, like yeah. people. Very few people we like, and we want to be left alone. We want to dine the way we want to dine. Like if we're eating something crunchy, we go to the other side of the house. Like we have
don't
those
like mouth noises. You know what I mean?
And so, yeah, we have those, the boundaries when it comes to, I am like you where I'm like, I want to tell everybody everything. My hairdresser knows everything about me, mm-hmm. my deepest secrets, where she is the complete polar opposite.
Yes.
So she has hard boundaries around eye gazing, around breath work with me.
I have
around
certain things that I share with other people that are not things that I choose. Like you don't cross a boundary with that of like
pushing you
things that we've talked about that I'm like, hey, this is not something to go tell the guy down the street at the gas station what happened. Like, can we not do that?
I don't tell him about your stuff. I tell him about my stuff.
Right. Your own stuff.
Yeah.
But like, there's just some things that he knows, like not to go spill to your friend. To go share, I shouldn't say, like, we don't gossip about each other. We don't complain about each other to any of our friends. Like, that's just something that we don't do. But like, even some of your own stuff, like you just know, we have had that communicate, like that conversation of like some things we just don't share that just stays between us. So we're very clear on that as well. Mm-hmm. And I know you respect that.
And there is, and I like to always push the envelope. Remember that excitement thing you talked about? Like, I always want to see what's next. Like, I really, really, like I live for that shit. And I'm like, if this is good now, shit. One is too many, 1,000 is never enough. Give me 3,000, bitch. Let's go. Like,
I want to circle back to your parents and that whole situation. So how did that end?
We haven't had a relationship with them in 8 years. So it ended.
It's still, there's still chapters hopefully to be written.
Yeah. We don't know. Like
we're in forgiveness modules right now in our somatic program to where we hope one day that we can forgive for our own well-being. Like I can say, yeah, I forgive them. But the thought of like, if they were coming over right now, I would have trauma responses.
Yeah. Mm. See, I did have to see them at an event last year and I was very okay with it.
Yeah. Did they try to reach out?
No, not really. I have a sister. So like, there's that. She just had a baby, like where we see her and her husband. But yeah, I had to see them. I was okay. Like on a somatic level, like I didn't have anything really coming up in the moment that was happening. And I was okay to see them and nothing really, you know, was,
I still wouldn't mind punching your dad in the face.
I mean, come on, man.
Not going to.
Was there a grieving process for you?
I mean,
did you grieve?
That's the thing. Cause that's still like, I have a blessing and a curse that I don't remember a lot of things from childhood. So now that I'm doing more of the work, more things are starting to come up. Mm-hmm. So we were in a phase that we just moved through it, that there may not have been a lot of processing that happened when that happened. Cause I was also going through my postpartum depression. Mm-hmm. I also just jumped right into competing. There's a lot of things that kind of masked a lot of the feelings that I just poured everything else into to not really sit with some of that. I mean, I've been to therapy, like multiple therapists over it. Like I'm also in EMDR, that we have gone down that path. But yeah, there might still be some things that come up from that still.
Mm-hmm. And then what about
what are you laughing at?
Still might be still
not you. He was laughing. I don't know.
Oh, I know. I think because that's what I think you said might be.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I have the EMDR processors too. So I became my own EMDR therapist as well.
Okay.
I want to talk about parenting.
Hmm.
So how are you consciously trying to do things different?
Oh man. So the biggest thing for me and what it was, which pushed me in June, mm-hmm. which got me my body ready to have the exploratory process it went through, was watching the at the time, the 7-year-old that we have, he was 7 and he had these looks in his face that Mallory wouldn't know, that nobody in the world would know unless you've had that experience. Mm. And so my 7-year-old was having feelings that he couldn't describe, but I knew exactly what he was feeling. And he was scared, and he is scared. He's lost. He has these attachments issues to things. When Mallory gets a new car or I get a new truck, he cries because he didn't say goodbye to it. And like these anxious attachment styles that we were never able to be. So it was first bringing the awareness to it. So we learned with some of our coaches how the developmental stages. And so when Ryder was 6.5 months old, we went into full shock. So part of what pushed us into shock, into the issues where we had to get shitty with her parents, every time Ryder was with her mom, again, high anxiety, he would cry. Mm-hmm. And so my Aunt Debbie, which is I love her, but she's a lot like me. She would say, no, your son feels the energy. Mm-hmm. And we're like, you're weird. Like, that's not a thing.
Yeah. At that point, we're like, what are you talking about? Weird.
No, like, there's not a thing. Like, go make money. Like, what is wrong with you? And like, that'll solve everything. And so then he was robbed because we didn't have an emotional stability between Mallory and I anymore. And we were in panic. I was in shock.
We were just in full survival mode, like so much anxiety
for a good
much,
3 months,
like, trying to just figure it out. Like, we just didn't even know. There was no grounding. There was nothing. It was just like so much of the unknown. And we had no idea at the time, as a baby, was feeling all of that and taking on all of that. And we didn't know. We had no idea when this was all.
And now he can't be alone. He tells me literally 2 nights ago, he goes, Dad, I'm going to live with you and mom until I'm married. And I said, why? And he goes, because I don't like being alone. Mm. And I'm like, now I know what I get to do this summer, you know, is get him and start doing those mindful things with him. And, mm-hmm. There's a story that was told to me about a trauma response. About a kid that was in his garage with his dad, and his dad told him to go get a wrench, and the kid goes and gets an Allen wrench, and then he gets a screwdriver, and then the dad goes, what the fuck is wrong with you? Go inside. You're useless. Just like
he got the wrong tool.
Cause he got the wrong tool. And those exact moments happened to me mm-hmm. growing up. Mm-hmm. And so I've always been trying to gain approval from Mallory because my dad never mm-hmm. gave it to me. Mm-hmm. And so the little Jeremy in me needs that approval. And I'm watching the generational repeat mm-hmm. and repeat mm-hmm. and watching him go back. So now it's full circling, knowing the awareness and saying, how does that make you feel? How do you feel about that? Is there anything you need from daddy? Is there anything that I can do for you? Is there something that you would like to do? What are you trying to say right now? Get inside your body. When he starts freaking out, wiggle your hands, wiggle your toes, breathe into your stomach. Where are you right now? Describe things around you. How are you feeling? Where is the feeling in your body? What does it feel like? Can you put a color or a shape? So we bring the full embodiment. He's in therapy. Is that a big problem or a small problem? What do you do with these problems? Can we solve them ourselves? Do we need to get an adult involved? There's mm-hmm. so many different things that we do when we're in a healthy place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's this term, well, parental inner child grief. I'm going to read it to you. I'm curious if it's going to ring true. So it goes, this happens to mothers and fathers who don't want to repeat the past, but don't fully understand how to identify and validate the grief of the child that lives inside of them. They feel they are giving what they never got. And when they give, they feel a kind of pain because the need in their child acts as a reminder or a trigger for the pain of their own unmet childhood yearnings and needs.
I give my son everything that I wanted. Mm-hmm. They're fucking spoiled rotten.
I mean, they are very spoiled.
I give them everything, but mm-hmm. my patience is like a 2. It used to be a -1.
Yes.
And so, yeah, go ahead.
No, I mean, you covered like a huge chunk of all of that. I thought you covered a lot of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, do you feel a yearning that like when we give something to our kids, because the way I heard her say that was, what I heard her say mm-hmm. was, that I give them something, but then my inner child hurts because I didn't have that. Mm-hmm. And I overdo it sometimes. Is that what you said?
Yeah. I mean, it just acts as a reminder of what we didn't get, you know?
Yeah. I can feel it with my kids. Mm. I can feel it. And then I look at them and it's only my 8-year-old, my 4-year-old. That's her healer. It's just like her. And so the 8-year-old, so there's a lineage from my mom. Mm-hmm.
You three are very similar. So son. He definitely connects more with him because they operate very similar. And I don't react in some of those ways. I just have different responses. So there's some parts of that that I just don't understand because I, even as a kid, like I didn't respond that way. So I don't connect with it as much. I'm there for him, obviously, but like he can look at it and be like, oh fuck. Like I know exactly.
You played alone. Ashton, our 4-year-old, was playing alone right there yesterday at the entryway. And he's having a ball. Ryder and I are on a bike ride down the street and nobody will play. So I was the kid. I called somebody. I'm like, can you play? And they're like, yeah, cool. I'll be there in 5 minutes. I would sit at the door and I'd pace and wait for him and pace and pace and pace and pace.
That's our oldest.
And then my oldest, he goes, let's go hang out with the kid down the street. I go, Ryder, he's mean to you. He goes, yeah, he uses me, but maybe he changed. Let's give him another chance. And I go, Ryder, he's not going to make you feel good. He goes, it's okay. He'll still play with me. And I'm like, this was last week.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I was in the first grade, I was friends with this one girl and it was like every day I would walk in and I didn't know if it was going to be a day where she was going to be really nice to me or if she was going to I was going to cry as soon as I got into the car. And I was thinking about that, about how, like, it didn't matter. Like if she wanted to be nice to me that day, I'd take it. And like, is that normal for a 6-year-old, you know, but that developed a fear within me where like, yeah, like this deep fear that people overnight are going to decide that they don't like me anymore for no reason.
Mm-hmm. And so did that change the way that you showed up the next day?
I mean, I would just take what I could get, but like in relationships, it was there. Like I would, anytime I was in a romantic relationship, just like this deep fear that for no reason, the guy overnight was going to decide that they didn't like me anymore, you know? And then I think sometimes when you have that, those kind of like inner fear, and then you like act accordingly, and then you kind of like manifest it into your reality, you know?
Insane. Mm-hmm. It's insane. Like when we look at each other, it's the same way. I'm like, I couldn't design a better partner than I have. Like, no joke. Like in my fantasies, I couldn't design a better partner than Mallory. All the, no matter what we're going through. And I'm like, shit. I'm like, I want to change so much. I want the excitement of change. I want the uncomfortability of change. I want to change. I'm like, shit, I'm a 12 out of 10 in that category. I'm a 10 out of 10 in that one. I'm a 9 out of 10. Okay, fine. I'm a 6 in that one. Oh shit. I'm a 1 there. Oh, let's address that. Let's go after that. And then I'm like, if it's not you because you're perfect for me, then what is it in me? And it's that unspoken stuff. It's those untreated parts of me, the shadows. Mm-hmm. And it's the things that are lying that she can't see, that I can't see, that I need somebody to help guide me through those things. Like for you as a therapist, for us, it was coaches and different meditations. And so what we know now is the only way to get through that is, and I just hired a new coach, is breath, sound, and movement is the only way to release these things. Mm-hmm. Analytically, the old paradigm of therapy was let's talk through this. And it's wonderful. That's the old mindset. That's like, people used to call themselves motivational coaches or motivational speakers. And it's great for 24 hours. And then you're like, oh shit, I go back to normal. Like you want a transformation. You want to be able to feel and embody something. And those are the only ways you can do it.
Yeah.
Any closing comments?
No, I really enjoyed that. I always love the opportunity. And the cool thing is that you're going to let us air this on our show and it's going to be the 200th episode.
I believe it.
Hell yeah.
We were going to do like a celebratory episode. It's like the perfect
and
one.
It just worked out absolutely perfect. No, I know what we're doing and the stuff that we have up ahead and our couples mastermind that we're launching in the fall and the one-on-one coaching containers that we have for our clients, her Level Up VIP group. And so if there's anything that any of your audience would like to connect on us deeper, deep dive us, you can hit us up in our DMs with, you can find us, her, where are you at?
At Mallory.
I will put it all in the show notes.
Amazing.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And you'll find me, Jeremiah.
You'll just find him wherever, you know, where that might be.
Wherever the hell you are. If you want to or you don't. If you want to find him or if you don't want to find him. You're right, going to find him.
He'll take it anyway.
I'll be there.
Yeah,
he'll
be there.
Yes. Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah. What you holding on to? Just let it all go. What's making you slow now? Just let it all go. What you got to do, yeah.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.